Immediately following the first attack, I implemented our government's emergency response plan.
Warning, you have been monitored by CCTV.
The government claims that they want to just give you a hand. Alex Ansari wants to give them the finger. Alex Ansari, Outside the Box.
Welcome to today's edition of Outside the Box, coming to you from Portland, Oregon, January 4th, 2007. A lot of news that we are going to be covering and focusing on this morning with you. Give me a call at 313-943-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. First thing that we're going to go over this afternoon, the U.S. intelligence chief is now going to switch jobs. Of course, that's John Negroponte, a career diplomat. Has been the National Internet Intelligence Director since the position was created in 2005. Well, apparently, he's going to resign, step down to become Deputy Secretary of State. And that is according to a government official on Wednesday night. Negroponte took over in 2005 as the nation's first intelligence chief, responsible for overseeing all 16 U.S. spy agencies. Now, Congress established the post in late 2004, following a recommendation of the 9/11 Commission, which reviewed intelligence misuses leading up to the terrorist attacks of September 11th, 2001. I would just say I think there were just a little more than just a few mishaps or accidents leading up to 9/11, just for starters there. But moving back to the article. Yet, it has been at times a struggle for Negroponte and his staff to bring all 16 spy agencies together under one umbrella. Again, more centralization of control. He will return to his roots as a career diplomat to become the number two to Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, according to the government official. But, of course, that is not the only thing going on planet Earth today. Here is some more big news heading your way. Democrats take control of U.S. Congress today. Well, Nancy Pelosi becomes the first female Speaker of the House in congressional history. Democrats take back control of the U.S. Congress for the first time in 12 years, vowing to hold President George W. Bush accountable for the Iraq quagmire, even as U.S. President George Bush prepares to announce a change of course there. Nearly 500 lawmakers, a third of the 100-seat U.S. Senate, and the entire 435-seat House are to be sworn in Thursday in the aftermath of November's historic election that saw public discontent with the Iraq War, which led to heavy losses by Bush's Republicans. I'd say that's an understatement. The new Democratic majority has set high on their agenda hearings the quelling sectarian strife in Iraq and perceived administration mistakes getting into the war. I've done a couple of shows after the last election, so I'm not going to spend hours upon hours upon hours rehashing the same news I already talked about. But contemplate this. Just for starters, you have all of these people that were really active before, some of them dropping out because they bought into an illusion, a packaging. It's like the control mechanism of the Illuminati is walking through one door, taking off one jacket, shredding it, while putting on another. 007 style. The exact same thing is happening with the Democrats if they're not interested in impeaching George W. Bush. Of course, according to Nancy Pelosi, that is not in their strategy. Of course, planning because they're thinking ahead for the year 2008. Well, let's see what kind of year we have prepared for 2008. Are these people truly anti-globalists? Or in some way, shape, or form, are they more globalist in nature, more socialist, perhaps more communist in nature at their roots and ideology than some Republicans? That's something that if you were to say that to your average liberal or leftist or whatever terminology you choose to label someone or they choose to label themselves, regardless, the information is still on the table. Who are these Democrats really working for, and will we ever see any accountability in Washington? We'll be right back. Welcome back. I have just a couple questions for you. What are your battle plans? What motivates you? What drives you? What are you, no matter what, in your own heart, in your own cerebral cortex, your brain? What are you going to achieve in terms of seeking and implementing the solution to so many of the dark pieces of news and legislation that we talk about each week, each day here at Outside the Box? What are you going to do? 1-800-313-9443. Is there something that's been burning inside of you about how you view this world, about your relationship with your Creator, something that's personal for you? What is it? And the second question is, are you still afraid to let what that urge is out? Are you prepared to go beyond the systems of control, the systems of influence, the social engineers that craft reality for us? But most of all, going beyond just that element, which you've heard of before, are you prepared to take back your own freedom and challenge yourself where you have possibly deceived yourself, lied to yourself? Because sometimes in this never-ending war on terror, when we face information that we don't like to talk about or think about, it happens. And there's a lot of stuff that's really uncomfortable to think about when you realize, and we are going a notch above describing the governmental super global structure. We're talking about the darkness that exists in man's heart. Now, for some reason, in this dark new age we find ourselves in, yeah, there's talks about paradigm shifting, I understand. And there's talks about all the good things that are happening. I try to cover those as well. But yet, in terms of how dehumanizing the manner is, in how some members of the United Nations, not only in the United States, treat people in the third world, to know all the details breaks your heart. Before I get into the story that I'm about to read, I want to tell you about new leadership in the UN. Ban Ki-moon is now taking over as the head of the United Nations. South Korea's Ban Ki-moon has taken over as Secretary General of the United Nations, the first Asian to hold the post in 35 years. The South Korean former foreign minister is the organization's eighth leader, and he succeeds, of course, Kofi Annan, who's at the helm for 10 years. Mr. Ban faces a number of global crises as well as reform of the UN itself. He has vowed to be a bridge builder and harmonizer and to set the highest ethical standards. Sorry if I read that sarcastically. I think they all claim that. Now let's get into the documentation of the stuff you've heard of for a long, long time pertaining to UN child sex slavery and the scandals that still continue to pour out. Wave after wave of child abuse reports pour forward from all over the globe. This is a report from a report from Steve Watson, who's one of the younger guys on the block that's been putting out information with his brother, Paul Joseph Watson, of the website, one of my favorites, PropagandaMatrix.com. I like InfoWars, but I like Propaganda Matrix better because I don't have to look at Alex's graphics or anything like that when I go to InfoWars. When I go to Propaganda Matrix, I can just look at the headline of the text, which is all I want. Just thought I'd throw that out there, but on to the article. The UN is to investigate itself again after it was revealed by the London Telegraph today that more than 20 different cases of child sex slavery involving UN staff have been reported in southern Sudan. Now, the Telegraph reports that it has learned of dozens of victims' accounts claiming that some peacekeeping and civilian staff based in the town are regularly picking up young children in their UN vehicles and forcing them to have sex. The Telegraph states that it is thought that hundreds of children may have been abused. The UN now has up to 10,000 military personnel in the region of all nationalities, and the allegations involve peacekeepers, military police, and civilian staff. Now, the Telegraph also states that the Sudanese government, which is deeply opposed to the deployment of UN troops to Darfur, as evidence of child sex slavery, including video footage of Bangladesh UN workers allegedly having sex with three young girls. And if I were to get into all the graphics, it would give you nightmares. Stating that such events are ultimately the work of, quote, a few bad apples, a UN spokesperson promised that they would be thoroughly investigated. Of course, over the past few years, there have been a hell of a lot of rotting fruit in the UN barrel. Last November, a BBC investigation found that children as young as 11 have been subjected to rape and prostitution by United Nations peacekeepers in Haiti and Liberia. A previous BBC investigation in Liberia discovered systematic abuse involving food being given out to teenage refugees, that's right, in return for sex. In both instances, the UN promised to investigate. Now, in 2007, the AP reported that UN officials were identified as using a ship chartered for peacekeepers to traffic young girls from Thailand to East Timor as prostitutes. In the same year, it was revealed that UN staff were guilty of raping women on a systematic scale in Sierra Leone. Previous to this, in early 2002, a massive pedophile scandal within the UN was uncovered involving sexual abuse against West African refugee children in Sierra Leone, Liberia, and a few other countries. UPI reported that senior UN officials knew of the widespread pedophilia. Not only did they not take action against the perpetrators, they covered up the atrocities. It was later reported that after the UN's investigating arm had cleared several UN workers of charges of sexual abuse against West African refugee children, it substantiated 10 new cases against aid workers. So pause here before we continue on. You're talking about a coalition of sick dudes. You have civilians, you have people working with military police, you have people on the local level, and you have people with the involved in the United Nations. And then, of course, you have the African militia groups, many of them involved in the behavior in the Congo as well. I remember grazing over CNN about a month ago. I didn't even bring all of these reports to this show. This is a good example to, good way, to get all the information at once, because it's not something that I particularly like to talk about. But I remember reading this. How messed up the Western United Nations, the U.S. government, the British, where we're there before we were a country, in fact, how much they've destroyed Africa. And in terms of how bad it's gotten and how young these children are, that's what makes it the worst thing of all. It's the age. We're talking about 5-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 3-year-olds in some cases, and then 10 and 11 and 12. You don't read as much about the really young ones. Damning cases involving workers making home porn movies and so-called weapons inspectors having bizarre, sadomasic, pansex leather fetishes has also emerged at this time. So this is really serious, and we don't have enough people talking about that. They always act as if every time something like this happens, it's just another anomaly. It's completely separate. People have been talking about the sex trade industry and the black market, of course, that is thriving, where there possibly is U.S. government influence. Now, I've heard those allegations. A friend of mine by the name of Clyde Lewis did a lot of work into the Bush family and their connection with the triads involved in and other criminal organizations involved in sex slavery on the Asian continent. If the United Nations is doing something similar as was alleged George Bush Sr. was a part of during that time, we could have a bigger problem on our hands other than just the Iraq war. With the situation in Iraq, with the situation with the police state, which we're going to segue back into in the world of surveillance after the next break, it is imperative, as I noted yesterday,
that this is all bigger than the Iraq war because this involves the continent, the region, the planet, everything. And, of course, includes more tracking and tracing of what people do. The ultimate question people are starting to ask now, which they weren't able to ask a few years ago, is why? That's a simple question. If everything you say, Alex, is true, if everything the AP and Reuters is reporting, that is, if they are reporting the real news, why would they desire more control? And the second question is, if they do desire more control or a depopulation plan such as something that's expressed in Agenda 21, why do they need less people? And there's one report we are going to get to in the next break before we kick off anything else. Just to, maybe I may weigh a little bit on this one. But just to entice your imagination into something that we may not understand about ourselves, about this planet, about our government. Through all the research and information you know about 9/11 and the Iraq War and secret societies, there's something that I can't shake. And there is a heck of a lot of information that we do not know about this government. And we won't. We'll be right back. By going ahead and writing to 12743, P.O. Box 12743, Portland, Oregon, 97212. You can also go to alexansery.com and make a donation through PayPal there as well. If you're interested in seeing a movie, and I know there aren't a lot of movies that are actually worth seeing, Apocalyptio, produced, directed, I believe, by Mel Gibson, creates this interesting end-of-the-world type of scenario, in a way, where people are rounded up out of fear and murdered by the Empire, which is represented as the Aztecs going after the Mayans in the movie Apocalyptio. I haven't seen it yet. I've heard a lot of really good, really interesting things about it. So if you're looking for something to do this weekend or later on tonight in your hometown, you should see it. This film, and he was very public about it, and of course was chewed up by the media for it, was that he made a comparison between the atrocious things behind the criminal structure of government depicted in the film and the Bush administration. It's a direct parallel to show you how history is repeating itself time and time again. Sometimes the best way to do that is through a movie, because so many people are sucked in to the entertainment industry, and that's all they know. That's how their reality is crafted for them. We're not crafting realities. We're blowing and shattering paradigms. But sometimes the best way to do that is through a DVD or a CD or CD-ROM, something in this new technological world, this grid, that you can give to them. They may not listen to what you're saying, but something may click. That may not happen with this film, Apocalyptia. It didn't, in my eyes, happen the way it should with V for Vendetta. And certainly not for a lot of people, 1984. For some people, they can make the comparison, but you'd be surprised, my friends. You'd be surprised. You talk to someone who's read those books, who considers themselves a liberal, or even someone who considers himself a constitutionalist. And they can't bring themselves, some of them, to fathom the idea that this government is criminal enough to the point where it is imperative that we stand up and do something about it. We're moving now into a... we got to get to this next article, but think about this concept. Psychologically, as a nation, a collective hive mind, we're moving from people in denial to people slowly piece by piece, incrementally coming out of denial, admitting there's a problem, and then we are realizing there was a new barrier before us, and that as people, once they realize 9/11 was an inside job, a self-inflicted wound, to peel back that layer of fear, tear down that veil, smash that paradigm, and get them to see that they can affect change if they believe it, if they're willing to stand up. That's the new paradigm. That's the new illusion. I've been noticing that a lot, intensely, the last year. As I've got more involved in speaking out and speaking to people, I will tell someone, like, are you aware? And just say it and go through the facts about 9/11, and they will agree with me. They won't disagree. They won't call me a kook, tell me I'm right on. They'll fake me, of course, for doing what I do. I wasn't expecting that. What I expect, and maybe I shouldn't expect anything, maybe that's my problem, but what I expect is to see them get on board. I accept people that claim that they are Americans to act as such and defend the Bill of Rights and U.S. Constitution. We're going to save this next article for last because actually it's going to blow your mind. You think you know about the world. You think you know everything that is possible based upon science. You mean the same science that throws out the importance of junk DNA, by, of course, giving it that title, junk DNA, because they don't understand that 95% of it. This is a strange time where people know so little about the universe, so little about the mortality of the human species, a time where people are so in the dark. About a world, about a lifestyle, about our very survival. It may be completely gone in 100 years. The way we are going, once a domino effect is engaged and nuclear weapons are thrown around the country, it doesn't matter who starts it. Look, right now it's looking at Israel. Of course, it's got the scope on Iran. We have a second fleet heading there, moving U.S. soldiers, the number of U.S. soldiers, to 15,000. That is a little march-up for a next great world conflict. We haven't been through a great conflict in a while. Iraq is not a great conflict. It's an invasion. There's a difference. The war on terror is not really a war because you cannot have a war on an individual person. Or an idea or a thought, like the war on terror, the war on drugs, the war on poverty, the war on illiteracy, the war on hate. It's moving back to slavery. It's the new sophistication of how slaves are defined. People think of slaves just one way. They remember darker-skinned people a couple hundred years ago picking cotton. You, my friends, if you stand up, if you don't stand up, and you don't do anything, are going to define the new slaves for the next century. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Republic Broadcasting Network. You're listening to Outside the Box. I'm your host, Alex Chancery, with you for about 27 minutes longer. Eric Schein from California, the host of In the Zone, is on the line. How are you, Eric?
Good, Alex. How's it going?
Excellent.
Dude, what's up? I wanted to call in about the comments you were making about Apocalypto, the Mel Gibson movie.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to spoil it for anybody. I saw it. It's a great movie. But there's a telling moment in there, and if anybody knows the history on it, you know, there's a bunch of argument right now of whether it's historically correct or not. But, there's a lot of people out there that support and say, no, it is. And Hollywood, whether it's Mel Gibson or anyone from across the, quote-unquote, broad spectrum of directors and producers and people who actually get stuff into the, to be seen on the silver screen, they do their homework and they try to make stuff as accurate as possible, barring, a lot of the propaganda that rolls out of there. But there's a telling moment where chief, you know, priest, high priest, is basically tearing hearts out of, you know, the tribal people that they've gathered from all around the area. And what they've done is they've actually foreseen or knew in advance of a coming event in the Earth's history, which is basically, I hate to, you know, blow it for anyone, but it was an eclipse of the sun. And so what they had done was, and they knew, and they look at each other, they know exactly when it's going to occur, and that all the death and ripping people's hearts out and everything else that's come before can now stop because of, you know, we've had this sign from on high. And it's right on point to what's going on now, to where our own science, our own military-industrial complex is being used against us, you know, even the Bible and more, to scare us through programs of fear and terror so that these people can basically rape and pillage and plunder mankind, not just overseas, but even here at home. And they're absolutely insane. They're trying to drive us towards world war.
And was I right about the film? Was it mostly about the Aztecs, oppression of the Mayans?
There's some mix-up in there because there's some debate over if it portrayed the Mayans or the Aztecs. And, you know, they basically, at some point, there's the introduction of Cortez. And so if you know the background on the history of Cortez, I think it was the Aztecs, right, that he came in and basically destroyed their civilization.
A lot of people look. I haven't really read the criticisms yet of what people have said. I know a little about some of the Mayan culture. I mean, which is slightly different than the Aztecs, but similar. I find it interesting that we're coming up on 2012, and whether their little prophecy was correct or not, I do see a major escalation in some of the things they talked about. And so I wonder sometimes what they knew back then that we don't know about ourselves today. I do wonder that, to be honest with you.
But even in some of those regards, it's like, you know, things are cyclical, right? And I mean, not just waveforms and more, but life itself is very cyclical. Whether you talk about the food chain or, you know, just energy or anything, you know, in this reality that we are, quote unquote, trapped within, the cyclical nature, and there, this even goes into physics and astrophysics and everything else, whether you talk about string theory and more. But at some point, you know, the calendar could have been like, okay, now the calendar restarts, and that it's on a cyclical period to where, I think it's 2012 or whatever, that cycle that they may have keyed in on back then, and, you know, because a lot of these ancient civilizations, they were very keen and very aware of their surroundings, of observing what was going on around them. And I mean, basically, modern man, we've checked out. We checked out a long time ago, or at least many of us have. To where,
yeah,
you know,
I trace some of that too, of course, back to our calendar and our level of time. Like right now, today, we live off the Gregorian calendar of 1582,
right,
which was kind of man-made, and it took us off the days where, you know, it was the ultimate self-sustainability. You know, you would look up at the sun, and we knew where what day it was, what time it was, and where we were.
We were connected to our environment. We were
right.
Part of it. We weren't lord and masters over it, seeing the you know, basically the environment as our slave. We saw ourselves as an integral part to it.
Yes, that's right. And you know, I'm starting to think about that more and maybe what they were talking about with 2012. I don't think about it too much. I actually don't think about I don't go back in history. Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, you want to really know, like, 2012? I was going to say it's like the millennium bug. Fear,
yeah,
and terror. Fear, because if they can keep you like a deer in headlights or on the run, and like, oh, no, you don't understand. In 2012, they're going to do this. They're going to do this. This has been going on for thousands of years and hundreds of civilizations. And I've tried to bring this, you know, forth and make it very clear to people that what is going on here in the United States, and it's a very complex, very wealthy society or civilization that we've built, and that at some point it takes a heck of a lot more work to tear it down. But what they're trying to do is exactly what they did in the former Soviet Union, exactly what they did in Germany, and just about any other empire or civilization before, even like what is represented in Apocalypto, is basically tear down the civilization from within, intentionally orchestrated, to steal all the national treasures.
I mean, even in Afghanistan.
Sorry?
Yeah, that's what they created the UN for.
Well, and even like in Afghanistan, there was a national treasure. It was like an enormous gold treasure. It was a bunch of antiquities. I mean, tens of thousands of, and it was just all gold and very, very, you know, thousands of years old, a lot of the pieces and stuff, that when we invaded, it disappeared. And then it popped its head back up and came back with not a piece missing. And you can't tell me that most likely, and this is just my own, you know, I guess, opinion on the matter, is that that thing, that whole treasure disappeared. They basically, you know, confiscated it, remanufactured all of the pieces in there, just like, you know, a lot of these, not Sotheby's or Sotheby's, whatever, but a lot of the, and Christie's, the, you know, not antiquities, but like the jewelry. You know, to where they make, like, replicas, and even Hollywood is, you know, big on this. But they do it as a security issue because they won't let out, like, the real jewelry, whether it's diamonds or gold or anything else. They'll oftentimes wear a replica because sometimes these things are worth millions of dollars.
Right, so they remanufactured it and resold it, the gold.
On the black market. And the same thing went on with the museums in Iraq, where they basically, and then what they did, though, is the $9 billion that's missing from the U.S. Treasury that was basically supposed to be used over there for, you know, petty cash to get the economy going, you know, again, supposedly. It was used to buy up the antiquities that were stolen when they left the museums open and let them be raided by the local people. They had tiger teams that went in, stole all the good stuff themselves in the fur, and then they had the locals, you know, grab anything and everything else. They used that $9 billion to go back and buy all the other treasures that the Iraqi people had snapped up locally. They bought up the treasures and then sold them on the black market. And that is identical to what Nazi
Germany did. I'm aware of that, but I happen to just believe that might be more than money. I really do. I think it might be more than money because just the whole nature of what we've seen with the suppression of information from the ancient times, there were human records of the Sumerian texts that they were taking from those museums in Iraq, and I'm wondering for what reason other than money, and I don't think it could be just money.
Well, no, it's also accumulation of knowledge, because knowledge is power, and just like right now, they basically converted the Internet into the Library of Congress, like a privatized version of the Library of Congress, and anybody who posts, anybody who puts their information up there, anybody who has their, you know, computer tied to the Internet, you've seen what's gone on with the eavesdropping, with the not just the
Google,
NSA and
yeah.
warrantless searches, but also going in and stealing or having access to your quote-unquote library records. When they talk about library records, they're not talking about your public library. They're talking about phone records. They're talking about your own computer records. They're talking about medical records. They're talking about anything and everything that is stored in a quote-unquote library of sorts, whether it's on a multimedia, CD, DVD, hard drive on a computer, even hard copies, to where they believe they have the right to go in, much like, you know, not Tsarist Russia, but Communist Russia, and basically that you are, as an individual, property of the state. And that's an extension of the Ferris Doctrine, which makes basically any military personnel property of the state.
That's true. Yeah.
They lose their constitutional rights and protections as an individual somehow, which I believe is just, you know, it's abhorrent. I can't even believe that we've allowed that doctrine to stand for so long and that we've had military personnel, whether they be enlisted or officers or going to the various academies, that have not fought that tooth and nail from within the military and even outside.
The editor and publisher has just reported that the poll for military papers finds troop support for war plunging. And this is quite interesting because I'll just go over the first paragraph and people can think about it. But it notes that it's often written or said that in the media that despite public opposition to the Iraq war here at home, military personnel strongly has backed President Bush's handling of the conflict. But a poll for the Military Times paper released Friday shows that more troops disapprove of the president's handling of the war than approve it. That's quite interesting. This comes right as we just hit 3,000 on New Year's.
Well, people are starting to realize, though, too, even issues of depleted uranium, why we're in there. I mean, think about it. We never invaded Iraq, not this most recent time. Bush didn't. Papa Bush did. I mean, we were already in there, and we never left. We had the no-fly zones. We had everything else going on. And basically, it was set up to destroy and pulverize that country, make it to where it was, you know, it could not defend itself. And then we could come in, and, you know, GWB could look like a hero, supposedly, because we had softened them up so much for 10 or 15 years or more, and basically come in and take over and not only impose our, you know, empire upon them, but systems like the Federal Reserve, because that's one of the things that's going on, is they're trying to set up this world currency under the Federal Reserve system, and much of what's even going on with the European Union, it's hard to tell whether it's to battle that and basically stand against it and, you know, push out the Federal Reserve and the Federal Reserve system.
That sounds much more likely to push out the Federal Reserve, and just because it is in itself somewhat of a new system. It was modeled after the Bank of England, after another failed central currency system in the 1800s. I believe it was Andrew Jackson.
Right.
Abolished that first one. So I'm starting to wonder, because the euro is really doing good right now. It's kind of freaky.
but you also have to realize, though, Israel is a big player in what's going on. Germany is still a big player. World War II was just a battle. It was not a world war. It was just the beginning of what we're starting to see now. And these guys, they literally, if we do not stand up and stand tall and stand strong, arm in arm, together against any and all wars, and say that this is utterly ridiculous, that we are killing other people around the globe. I don't care if they're, you know, short, tall, brown, yellow, red, you know, green, whatever. I don't care. At some point, they are our brothers and sisters, and you know, we should not be. And you can tell, and this is exactly what went on in World War II, was that they tried to dehumanize, you know, the Japs, the Gooks, the Nips, all the terms that were thrown around, kikes, I mean, on and on and on, to dehumanize people, make them less than us so that it is easy to kill them. And everything that's going on with the destruction of unions, attacks upon priests, all the stuff that Negroponte and a lot of these other individuals have, you know, carried on overseas in El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Central and South America, and even in the Middle East and other places, they're bringing home to our country here, and they do not care. They will kill our own people in a heartbeat. They're already doing it. They've killed over 3,000 people with this illegal, unlawful, immoral war in Iraq that they're not only allowing to continue. And people like Pelosi and all these other people better watch out, because there's like Cindy Sheehan and others, and I don't know if you've seen what she's been up to. But, you know,
She's got a video up where she protested their little mini inauguration or whatever. And Nancy Pelosi's supposedly getting hundreds of thousands of, petition signatures that are screaming for her to, you know, that's what they want. They want that to be the first. That's what I forgot to mention earlier. They want that to be the very first order of business. Impeach. And the Democrats are saying we need to focus on the domestic issue. Then maybe we'll get to the real issues.
And what they're doing, though, is they're basically Bush Light. And what they're doing is they're trying to, like, do the whole education thing, medical thing. And it's not for indigenous people like you and I and others who have been born and raised here for a generation or several generations. It's for all this flood of, you know, and the whole immigration issue is such a hot topic. But, you know, I estimate that there's as much as 40 or 50 million undocumented illegal immigrants in the United States now. Because this has been going on. There's people out there that have been here for 20 years or more that have been flying under the radar. And a lot of this, though, the whole issue on immigration is, like, even the now the stuff Bush is trying to sign the thing on Social Security to allow Mexicans or immigrants from Mexico to count 8.5 years of their employment time in Mexico towards Social Security, and all they need is 18 months here, and then all of a sudden they have the 10-year eligibility that they need to be vested in Social Security. And it's like, what? And it goes right towards the North American Union, where these guys are moving full steam ahead, and it's to destroy and take down the United States from within. And, you know, it may not even be as much to create a North American Union as it is to just basically dissolve and pulverize the United States from within, so that there is nothing to stand against this world globalism or communism that they're trying to set up, one world government.
That's true. That goes back eons and eons, long before the Bush administration. Eric, thanks for calling. It's you provide a lot of good info.
Dude, peace. Keep up your good work, man.
Yeah, thanks. I want to mention this for Mexico because you just mentioned it. Here's an article, and I was trying to think of how this fits in. I don't really understand, other than the fact that Mexico is really messed up, something you already know. But headline reading, Mexican deploys troops to fight Tijuana drug gangs. Mexico's now sending 3,300 soldiers and federal police to fight drug gangs in the border city of Tijuana, which has become a major smuggling route for cocaine and meth entering the U.S. This is sick. This is sad to see people live like this. And it's sad that they would have to leave their home or want to leave their home to come here. So I think we need to look at the Mexican politics and figure out how to put a real bandage on this wound. We'll be right back.
Mixtures bridge.